Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews.
Wir versaufen unser Oma ihr Kleinhäuschen. Wir versaufen unser Oma ihr Kleinhäuschen mit der ersten und der zweiten Hypothek. Ja, wir versaufen unser Oma ihr Kleinhäuschen.
Guten Tag, everybody. I'm Aaron Martell.
And I am Mike.
And I am Luis.
And welcome to Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, a podcast where we discuss and analyze a musical album of our choice. This is our annual Oktoberfest episode, where we celebrate music or artists that have a connection to Germany, which can apply to anything from German-based artists to music that was recorded in Germany. So on this episode, we're going to review Helloween's 1987 album, Keeper of the Seven Keys, Part 1. Rockin' Mike, what's your Helloween history as well as this particular album?
So I came in to Helloween with this album, and it was... actually, you know what? I don't remember if it was this album or not. The Headbangers Ball Tour with Anthrax, Exodus, and Helloween. That was kind of when they came on my radar. So I always felt that if they were good enough to tour with Exodus and Anthrax, I was in. And I was familiar with some of their stuff. I got I Want Out Live and some other things, but I didn't get Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 1 until about probably 5 or 6 years ago, just because I was always listening to it on YouTube, and then I happened to find a copy of it used, so I grabbed it.
Nice. Lou, how about you?
I can't remember when I first heard them. It was current, so it had to be around 87, 88. It all kind of blends into the same year after a while. When this CD came out, I was really into Queensryche and Judas Priest and Cinderella, Aerosmith, the new version of Aerosmith that came out. What was that around? Permanent Vacation. I was listening to WSOU, Pirate Radio, Seton Hall Radio. I taped this off my friend's CD, so I had it on a Maxell 2 90-minute tape with Rage for Order on the other side by Queensryche, which just fucking fit on the other side.
All right.
But that's where I'm coming in, about 87.
The first time I ever heard of Helloween was when I saw the music video for the song Helloween, which comes off this here album, probably had to be on MTV Headbangers Ball. And the song is heavily edited for the video. The original track is a much different beast that we're going to talk about later. And I like that song, but I never bought the album. And this band has been around a long time, you know, like we're saying, the 80s, with the changing lineups and shit. And I would occasionally hear a track or two that I thought were pretty good, but this is a band I just never got into. I figured I'd get around to really checking them out someday. So this is really the first Helloween album I've done the deep dive with, and here we are. Now I'll provide you with some basic facts about this record, and of course, I use Wikipedia for this shit. Come on. Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 1 is the second studio album by German power metal band Helloween, released on May 23, 1987 on Noise Records. It was produced by Tommy Newton and Tommy Hansen and was recorded from November 1986 to January 1987 at Horus Sound Studio, Hanover, Germany. It reached number 15 on the German Albums Chart and number 104 on the US Billboard 200 chart. And if it has any certifications, Wikipedia is unaware of it. And here's the band's lineup card. We have Michael Kiska on vocals, Kai Hansen on guitar and backing vocals, Michael Wyckath on guitar, keyboards, and backing vocals, Marcus Grosskopf on bass and backing vocals, and Ingo Schweichtenberg on drums. Okay, let's commence our track-by-track analysis of this album. We open the record with Initiation, written by Kai Hansen.
Initiation.
Rockin' Mike, what do you say?
Intro. I don't know what else to say to this. It just it helps set the mood of the album, and it builds to the next track. That's pretty much all I got.
Lou.
Smoking spandex. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun. Definitely let you know right away what you're in for. But cue that double bass. There you go.
Yeah, instrumental intro to the album, right? Kind of plays like the opening music to a movie soundtrack. At least that's how I hear it. Mm-hmm. Big, dramatic, fake orchestral sounds and vocals played on keyboards. The guitars and bass play a dramatic melody along with a slow drum beat that tells us, welcome to the album. We invite you to take the journey with us. That's how I see it. It sets up the record and segues directly into the next track. And that next track is I'm Alive, written by Kai Hansen. Lou, your thoughts?
There's the riff. There's that double bass. Now we're off and running. It sounds like the singer's foot is firmly planted on the monitor as he leans forward with his mic stand, pointing to the crowd and screaming out, I'm alive! Yeah. Few Judas Priest defenders of the faith, that hero solo kind of makes you stand up straight and take your hat off and salute, you know. Oh, there's Tipton on the one side, and I mean the other guy doubling it on the other side. Mm-hmm. All the while the drummer's behind him like pounding the fucking hell out of his double bass drum. One more chorus and we're out. Yeah.
Mike.
So you forgot one thing, though. After every, I'm alive, you forgot the little squeal every time he does it. You're like, so I've been doing that all week. I was like, I'm alive. So, I mean, it's straight up power metal, right? And, you know, it's, and looking back, it's funny how heavy I thought they were. And apparently I didn't know the definition of the word heavy. Yeah. Because it was really all about the speed. The drums are incredibly simple, but they're fast. And everything just layers on top of that. The drums almost sound like they could be played by Filthy from Motorhead, because it's just kind of like dish, 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 dish. He doesn't do anything out of that kind of that zone other than just here's the bass. I'm going to set the tempo and your rest are just going to take off and build on the top of that. The vocals break glass like all good power metal should. Michael Kiske is kind of like in Jeff Tate's wheelhouse. But what makes it special is that harmonized I'm Alive. You can hear Kiske's vocals, and they build the tension to the chorus, which is sweet. Now, let's talk about the guitar solo. So, first of all, it had the potential to be a train wreck. It really did. And I was like, oh, here we go. Now, the solo is 1 minute and 19 seconds long. It's a 3 minute and 22 second song. Over a third of a song is the solo.
As it should be.
It should be, right? So, and I love it. I mean, it's melodic. It picks up shredding into guitar harmonies, back into a riff, back to guitar harmonies that build to a melodic lead. And I just have one question after listening to this. Would Dragon Force even exist as a band if it wasn't for this solo?
No way.
Because it's all you hear is fire in the flames. That's it's so, but I really like it. So it was great to take me back.
Well, yeah, this track races along with Ingo Schweichtenberg's speedy double bass drumming, Kai Hansen's chugging rhythm guitars, and European classical-inspired melodic leads. I read that there was an illness to second guitarist Michael Wycaff that limited his ability to play guitar, so all the rhythm tracks on the record were done by Hansen. You can clearly hear Marcus Grosskopf on bass, but the production's very bright. There's not much oomph to the bottom end. And on this album, we're introduced to vocalist Michael Kiske, who to my ears sounds so much like Jeff Tate of Queensrÿche, it's uncanny. I mean, if I hadn't heard this album and you told me this was Tate, I would have believed you. Kiska's voice handles the melodic leaps and holds the long, high notes with ease. The solo section, as you were saying, Mike, it's impressive. It switches back and forth from excellent melodic passages with occasional guitar-mini dressing to blazing note flurries that I can only describe with my new phrase, shred a bonanzical fantastica. The lyrics to me are about empowering someone who's lost his way. Stick with me. I'll help you. I'm your friend. Together we can do anything. Let's be glad that we're here and sing out, I'm alive. I can't, you know, Lou has the corners of market on that one on this podcast.
Yes, he does.
The chorus has massive gang vocals and it's anthemic. And the whole track has this exhilarating upbeat mojo to it that says, wake up, people. This is power metal, bitch. And you're going to get swept up in it. The following track is A Little Time, written by Michael Kiska. No. Mike, how about this one?
So this one's a little bit more of a traditional riff, and we're a full verse in before we even know where the song is going. So this one I had a hard time with only because the solo seems completely disjointed as it descends into that panned clock solo. I want to know who played the fucking clock. Like, it's this guy running back. I just imagine this guy running back and forth between to get the pan effect. So, you know. And it's the same thing. It's got that little squeal, A Little Time. This is
Mike's unimpressed fluffy fart.
Lou.
See, I dug this one. That riff starts it. The riff sounds like something out of every other power metal song that was written in, you know, that half of the decade. I think it's even in B. They're all in B. Anyway, the riff starts this one, and then the band joins in, and this guy really likes Jeff Tate and Rob Halford. So does this band. The drummer's got this double bass thing down. I mean, there's just it's almost cliche with the song, but it gets your toe tapping. But there's so much reverb. There's a lot of reverb. The singer sounds like he's in Howard Stern's homo room, right? You know, the homo. I wish I had a reverb effect on my mixer because I would have done it right now. But anyway, I digressed. I kid. The chorus sounds like Dokken, just repeating the title. A Little Time! The solo sounds like Tipton and Downing again. It gets a little trippy towards that 2:15 mark. Sounds like what you'd experience if you're like falling asleep while you were listening to this. You know, the clock's ticking. And yeah, who did the clock? I was the clock. Clock of Halloween. Lots of harmonics, delay, some whispering. The alarm clock rings and, oh, I'm awake again. We're right back to and the gang vocals. I mean, it's okay, I guess. It's a decent tune. It's not my loser.
So Hansen's tasty opening riff leads to a crunchy mid-tempo rocker that adds the double bass drumming on the pre-choruses and choruses, but it doesn't increase the beats per minute. Mike, you were kind of saying something about that. Like, it's fast, it's impressive, but it doesn't vary much.
Right. It's very simple drumming.
Yes. The pre-chorus has booming backing vocals, and Kiska still sounds like Jeff Tate, and the chorus throws in the refrain of a screechy, A Little Time, as a call, and Kiska giving his responses, and it works well to my ears. I dig those guitar squealies in the chorus, and the solo is odd and short, featuring both guitarists playing a lot of dive bombs. This leads to a breakdown section straight out of Pink Floyd. Sam George, I stole your superpower. With ticking clocks and a final mechanical alarm going off to take us back to the chorus. Lyrically, I'm getting that time is short to chase your dreams and goals. So get after it. Fuck the naysayers. I dig this one too.
Is this a concept album? I couldn't get any kind of correlation to the lyrics or, you know, I mean,
If it is, I'll tell you what. It's not a concept album like Tommy or Operation
right,
Mindcrime.
That's what I was looking for.
Or if there is, I'm missing it because a lot of these songs seem to be separate songs.
I'm glad I'm not alone because I did the same thing. I actually Googled, is Keeper of the Seven Keys a concept album?
Yeah.
I'm like, I couldn't even tell. I'm like, I don't understand the theme.
It doesn't seem to be. I don't think that it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next track is Twilight of the Gods, written by Kai Hansen. Lou, how about this one?
Man, they don't take their foot off the gas for this one either. It's got that galloping Iron Maiden priest rhythm. This record's a real neck breaker. Lots of classical scales, expertly played, harmonized to the point of metronome accuracy, all the while with the double bass just driving them well past the speed limit. This is just one of those songs you can't drive slow to when it's on, and I find myself aggravated if it's on low in the background.
Rockin' Mike.
So there are so many subgenres of metal, and they often bleed together. During the verses, the rhythm guitar in this could be a thrash song if they had a darker tone to it, just the way it kind of chugs along there, which I guess is kind of why they got paired up with Exodus and Anthrax on that Headbangers Ball tour. I really like how throughout this album, but this is the song I first noticed it on, how they allow the bass to bubble out throughout the mix. I just think that's a nice little production touch. I like how you described it, Aaron, the production was thin, because it is. It's a thin production, but that's something that they did on this that I really approve of. Another cool power metal solo, great guitar harmonies. What I like also is how the drums and bass stutter in the solo. There's a cool little stutter to it that I think is pretty cool, and they don't bury that in the mix. So that goes back to what I was saying. It really serves the song, and it kind of catches my ear. There's a staccato picking under the verse that sounds almost like keyboards, which I like. It's definitely an album track, but I really like this song too.
Blam! In your face. This one rips right out of the gate with racing double bass drums and a melodic guitar passage that sounds like they took the guitar solo from the middle of the song and just stuck it right at the beginning instead. The verses begin with the galloping rhythm and then switch back to the speedy section, and there's some cool, like you were saying, Mike, noticeable bass flourishes from Grosskopf in the pre-choruses. Once again, there's a sense of heightened drama in the music and layered, heavily reverbed backing vocals in the pre-chorus and choruses. The solo section again mixes harmonized melodic phrases with impressive note shredding. It's awesome. Kiska hits some impressive high notes. Holy war in the sky! I can't even fucking do it. You know, way up there. Sky, Lou, you got to help me here.
Sky!
Yes, that's it.
Damn.
And that was awesome. And the lyrics tell a far-out fantasy tale of the rejected old gods battling the new gods that are worshipped by the inhabitants of the fictional land Insania. The holy war in the sky is so fierce and fiery it spells doom for the people of Insania, destroying one world but birthing a new one. Oh yeah, it's out there. But this bombastic music perfectly reflects the wacky lyrics. It's a thumbs up from this nerd right here.
The bass player. Shout out to what's his name? Let's look him up here. Who's playing
Grosskopf.
Bass? It's Grosskopf.
Yes,
Marcus Grosskopf. He's I get this picture of Derek Smalls in my head, though. You know, the real pork chop sideburns and the mustache and everything, and just that do. It's in like Joey DeMeo territory of Manowar. It's really. He's no slouch.
The following track is A Tale That Wasn't Right, written by Michael Wycath.
Of a tale that wasn't right. I'll have no sleep tonight.
Mike, what do you think?
So I like the song a lot. Let's get that right out of the way first. However, is it me or is the piano Home Sweet Home? You know, you've got the down, 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 and then this has the down, 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 down. It's like they did half of it. I really don't care. But also, now a go-to album for me to reference is always Kings of Metal by Manowar. So when this song first came on, there's one line at the way Kinski punctuates the end of the line. It reminds me of Heart and Steel by Manowar off Kings of Metal. Now, Kings of Metal came out after, so this was first, but it's like at the 2:31 mark. I spent all week trying to figure out what song it reminded me of. I'm like, I've heard that. And that's what it is. So I don't know why Kings of Metal has left such a huge mark on me. And I find a way to, Sam George's superpowers bring everything back to Pink Floyd, and somehow I bring everything back to Manowar, which I don't quite get. So it's a great melodic solo. The drums, it's just kind of boom, crash, boom, crash. But it's a ballad, so I'm going to let that pass. The song gives us a break from the speed of everything that came before. So as far as sequencing, I'm giving this a thumbs up because I think it gives a cool break, and this is perfectly placed for that song. However, now, my only criticism, the ending of the song can fuck off. You're going to fade out on vocals. Just tell us, just flat out tell us, hey, we have no idea how to end this fucking song, so we're just going to turn the volume down. Like, kids fall, and they're like, yeah, we're going to turn you down now. That's my only negative piece on this song, but I love this too.
Lou.
I'm waiting in a cold cell when the bell begins to chime. No, wait, this is Halloween. I'm not reviewing Number of the Beast. Where the fuck am I? What year is it?
It's okay. Maiden got sued for that as well.
Did I?
Yes.
Who did they rip off?
I don't know, but they got sued for it, and they did a whole tour, the whole Book of Souls tour. They didn't play it.
Oh, shit.
They settled out of court.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I don't know how this song ends because I hit skip around 3:15. right after I guessed what the solo was going to sound like before it happened. And I wrote in my – it's funny because I wrote in my notes, I bet it fades out too.
Oh, it does.
So that's what I got about that.
This is a power metal power ballad, complete with a weepy guitar intro and plenty of emotional vocal fries in the singing. There are high keyboard trills to simulate strings, and the choruses, of course, bring the power to the power ballad. Halloween does bombast better than anyone with the big guitar chords and soaring lead and backing vocals. There are also crying guitar leads that provide an escort to the choruses, and the brief solo will grab your heartstrings and tie them in knots. The lyrics seem to be about a guy whose girl's cheating on him with his friend. Ouch! And he's just wallowing in misery and pain. 10 billion songs have been written about this kind of shit. Here's one more. But as far as power ballads go, this is pretty well executed. I dig it. So let's flip the imaginary record over and drop the imaginary needle on Future World, written by Kai Hansen. 'Cause we are in future world, a world that's full of love. Our future life will be glorious. Come with me, future world. Lou, start us off.
Okay, I like this one. The drummer changes it up on this one. Instead of just booga, 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 he's like, you know, boom, bap, boom, boom, bap, boom, bap, boom, boom, bap. So, you know, that there's one for him. It's got a catchy sing-along chorus. He's not just screaming for screaming's sake. And the verses fucking swing. The bridge leading into the solo is creepy and cool at the same time, and the rest of the song follows the repeat chorus until the end formula. It ends well, and it's a good song. Future World! Yeah.
Rock and Mike.
So this was the only single off the record, which is weird, but no video. So I always thought that was an odd choice on this one. The production, I wrote it here too, Aaron. The production makes it sound thin.
Yeah.
There's a great version on the live album they put out a few years back called United Alive in Madrid, which that, to me, that's a great version of this. Because you get around that thin production a little bit with the thickness that they put in today's production. It's probably the most straightforward song on the album. Where Lou was talking about the booga boogas of the drum, I wrote down that this song has a lot of chugga chuggas from the guitar. So Lou and I'm channeling my inner Lou on this one tonight. The breakdown with the laugh that leads into the solo is a bit odd, but I like it. And from the solo forward is where the song gets going for me. That guitar-monized melodic solo into the single guitar. Again, the choice of to let the bass line bubble out, I think, is a great choice. And I think this is a great start to side two.
This has a nervous energy with the staccato guitars and bass, along with the fast tempo. When the song kicks in, there's added drawn-out guitar chords to kind of counter the clipped riffing. And the chorus solely emphasizes the long chords to heighten the anthemic nature of the vocals. And then, like, the weird breakdown section features sci-fi effects, silly noises, and creepy giggling. The solo's melodic guitar-mony goodness and the vocal lines in the pre-chorus and chorus have like a up-and-down roller coaster pattern that really works well. Now, unless I'm daft, the lyrics are about a time traveler who brings someone with him to the future where the world is glorious and full of love and happiness without fear. Then the time traveler brings this special person back to spread the word and lead the revolution to this better world, a sort of like teaching the Messiah what he needs to do. The chorus, as usual, is big and catchy, and I dig this one, too. And as Mike said, this is the lone single from the album. The penultimate track is Halloween, written by Kai Hansen. In the streets of Halloween, the spirits will arise. Make your choice in town. You like this one, Mike?
I do. I love this one. I mean, let's be honest. This song is the reason why we're here. So 13 minutes and 18 seconds of pure power metal bliss. So the first 4.5 minutes, roughly, we've already heard all of this, all record. Operatic vocals from Michael Hinsky, the bubbly bass lines, the melodic lead work. But then the whole thing just opens up and it really takes off. And I just kind of lose myself in it. The solos are glorious, melodic. Everyone gets a shot to come to the front. But again, the definitive version of this for me is off of United Alive in Madrid. So I don't know if you guys know. So Kinski left the band in 93 and they replaced him with a guy named Andy Darris. And they did this tour. They put out a song called Pumpkins United. And they did a tour with both vocalists. So right now, Kinski's back in the band, and the guy, it's almost like an Iron Maiden situation, but with singers. It'd be almost like Blaze Bailey stayed when Bruce Dickinson came back. So there's, if you get a chance, go on YouTube, look up Halloween Live, and they start the set with it, and you have both vocalists at the same time, and they're going back and forth and trading line. It's so cool. And they do the full 13 and a half minutes. That's how they open the set.
Wow.
It's phenomenal. It's really cool. I love this song. I know I was a bit shocked after I saw that same video, Aaron, that you were talking about on MTV. It's a little hokey, the guy with the pumpkin head and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, you get the album and you're like, they cut 8 minutes out of this fucking song. Like 8 minutes. And the thing that's weird, about 7.5 minutes in, you think the song's going to end. There's like an ending there. It's like a false ending. And then all of a sudden it starts back up and you're like, fuck, I'm not even halfway through yet. But yeah, I love this track. I love everything about it.
Lou.
Doesn't it have a very Alice Cooper-y beginning and theme to it? Like Welcome to My Nightmare, Bob Ezrin kind of feel to it.
Yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, Twisted Sister too. It's like they took a really heavy metal band, power metal band, and almost, made commerciality out of it. in a very metal way. It's very digestible, but in a very metal way. It reminds me of Twisted Sister, the "Welcome to the Abandoned Land" in the beginning. The riff gives me an early Overkill kind of vibe to it. It's about 5 years earlier. That's what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Definitely monitor rock, though. Pump That Fist, man. I'm hearing Ram It Down, One Shot at Glory, which I think came out like the year after Judas Priest off of Ram It Down. The children's chorus is cool. The pre-chorus sounds very Maiden-y. And then it's all, you know, it's Halloween. Yeah, it's fucking great. I love the way it's like they progged out the song in the middle, too, to make it epic. They were definitely, most definitely in competition with Queensryche with this. It sounds like they were shooting for a rhyme of the Ancient Mariner kind of vibe. It misses the mark that sets, but the different sections really tie together perfectly without making it boring. It's a great album closer.
Holy shitballs, Batman. An epic track over 13 minutes long that throws everything in it, including the kitchen sink. It's got multiple sections, constant tempo shifts, unbelievable musicianship, and otherworldly vocals. That main riff, it's a choppy chugger that'll stick in your head. I love it. The pre-chorus turns it up with a double bass drumming, and the chorus highlights Kiska's high soaring voice. The first solo section is melodic and leads to a slower atmospheric breakdown with haunting background keyboards. Then fuck me, even Marcus Grosskopf gets into the act with some nice mini bass runs. This section builds to the second solo spot, where it sounds like a trade-off between the two guitarists. After another quiet breakdown, we get the next solo section, which is another trade-off over a slowed-down rhythm. Then we get yet another breakdown section that, to me, resembles the breakdown of Metallica's One. Or maybe it's the other way around, since this song came out a year before Injustice for All. And hey, I haven't given enough props to Ingo Schweigtenberg. I mean, the man has been a beast on drums this entire record. He has really kept incredible time with the fast double bass drumming. The next solo section is a shredding clinic with lengthy, classically inspired harmonized passages that are nothing short of jaw-dropping. Then after all that, we're brought all the way back to the final pre-chorus and chorus and the dramatic finish with Kiska's long vocal wails. Damn, incredible, man. And not for one instant am I bored. This is how you do lengthy epic tracks, am I right, current Iron Maiden? The lyrics are bonkers too. They reference kids dressing up and going trick-or-treating, spirits rising, magic both light and dark, Satan as tempter and corrupter, moral and spiritual choices leading to heaven or hell, and even It's the Great Fucking Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. This is an early masterpiece by this band, one of their signature tracks. I knew this from the heavily edited video version that does not do this song justice, not even close. And what else can I say but, it's Halloween!
Nice.
And that brings us to the final track, Follow the Sign, written by Kai Hansen and Michael Wycath. Lou, how about this last one?
I guess this is the outro or the intro to part two. I don't know. I didn't listen to the second one. It asks if I made my choice. I didn't know I was supposed to. did I miss something? Shit. Now I have to listen to it again. Yeah, it's an outro. See you later. Halloween.
Rockin' Mike.
So, it's funny because, I mean, I just took this as a teaser for part two, and I love part two as well because you got Dr. Stein and I Want Out on that as well.
So is it like a Venom thing where, you know, they had like the beginning of the album at the end of this album?
No. Well, oh, okay. You know what? I got to listen to it. It's been a while since I've listened to part
War
two.
Yeah, War with Satan thing that they did.
Yeah. So this was originally supposed to be a double album, and the label said no. So they cut it in half. So they just kind of gave a teaser. But what this reminds me of, I was referring to these as not songs, the first one and this one. It reminded me of the end of Vinnie Vincent Invasion, All Systems Go. That creepy little thing at the end where he's like, tell your friends about us. And like, he takes the S in us and like, there's like 50 S's on the end of that. But yeah, it's just a teaser for part two. So I made my choice. I bought part two.
Yeah, this is basically an added coda to Halloween, basically. It's just under 2 minutes with slowly developing emotional guitar licks, moody keyboard atmospherics, and whispered spoken vocals. The voice assumes you made your choice from the previous track, Between Heaven and Hell. That's what I guessed, because that's what they said, make your choice between heaven and hell. And now that you are the keeper of the seven keys, you need to follow the sign. To what? The next album? I don't know, and I don't really care. Is this really necessary? I'm cheating like a motherfucker, but this is clearly
Aaron's stinky stinker.
Now that the track by track is completed, we'll give our final thoughts and album ratings. For you new listeners, the rating is a 0 to 5 system, with 5 being a favorite album of ours, all the way down to a 0, which made the wrong fucking choice and went straight to hell. Rock and Mike, give us your final thoughts on Keeper of the Seven Keys, part 1.
All right, I'm giving this a 3.75. So it's a classic album. If you like metal, you grew up in the 80s with metal, and or even if you're somebody getting into metal now and you want to go back as far as power metal, this is where you want to be. You want to check this record out. So I think this is a must-have for anybody that is dipping their toe in the power metal genre. Now, the length of the album with the two not songs on here makes this feel like an EP to me. So for that, I know Halloween is, you know, an epic track, but it still makes it feel a little short. So it hurts it in my eyes, but I love it nonetheless. I regularly revisit, and I will continue to. This is power metal at its finest.
Lou.
All right. So the disclaimer to this is all this stuff kind of makes my eyes roll nowadays. In 1987, I loved Queensryche, Judas Priest, to a lesser extent, Iron Maiden, etc. But it got silly after a while. After Ram It Down and Seventh Son, I kind of lost interest in who could play the fastest, most intricate solos trading back and forth. I got a little sick of the drummers that are pounding out the same Scott Travis kind of for every song. And I lost interest in whose singer could scream louder and higher and longer. And, you know, they should have called this band Hydrox. It's almost the same as an Oreo, but kind of cheaper and in a different bag. They didn't really add to it. I mean, all right, there are some ass kicking songs on this album for what this music, you know, for power metal. In 87, 20-year-old Lewis would have given this a 4, but 54-year-old Lewis gives it a 3 on Halloween. Yeah. I'm glad this week is over. I'm starting to question who my whole life from 16 to 21. But, you know, we can work through it.
Hamburg, Germany-based band Halloween had put out its first LP and a couple of EPs with guitarist Kai Hansen doubling as lead vocalist. The sound was akin to thrash metal, and Hansen's vocals had a rough edge to them. But the band was becoming interested in evolving their sound to a more technically intricate playing style, and Hansen knew he would have difficulty playing guitar and singing the new material at the same time. The thought was to hire a vocalist with a big, high, soaring voice in the vein of Jeff Tate from Queensryche. So enter 18-year-old Michael Kiska from local Hamburg group Ill Prophecy, who at first was uninterested, believing Halloween to be a thrash act, but when he heard the new music the band was working on, Kiska signed on. The band initially wanted to release a double album to introduce a new lineup to the world, but the band's label Noise Records turned them down flat. So they recorded a single LP that featured Hansen on all the rhythm guitar tracks, since second guitarist Michael Wyckoth was recovering from a mental breakdown and was only able to contribute some solos. The album cover was a concept by Kai Hansen, along with artists Edda and Yue Karzewski, depicting the Keeper as a purple-robed figure protecting a sphere containing the mystical Seven Keys. When Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 1 was released, it was well-received by fans and critics, and even made some inroads in the United States. The sound of the record, in which speed metal elements were combined with symphonic adornments and hooky soaring choruses and vocals, was considered the first album to introduce the new musical genre now known as power metal. Helloween toured the new album, including its first U.S. dates, but cracks within the band were already forming and the members were beginning to not get along. This would lead to numerous lineup changes over the years and constant instability within the band, but somehow Helloween always managed to persevere even to this day. I admit that I am not a power metal connoisseur. I view this record as basically my first real taste of the genre, and I'm pleased to report that I enjoyed my meal very much. I hear the vague influences of bands I really dig, like Judas Priest and Queensryche, and I can appreciate the powerful vocals, keyboards that are present but not too intrusive, and shifts in dynamics and tempos that Helloween employs. And shredding. I love me some shredding. And this album features some amazingly head-spinning examples of the technique without causing me to pass out from too much overkill with it. I give Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 1 a 3.5. And yeah, I'm sold on this. This record makes me interested to further explore Helloween and other power metal bands in the future. And that's a damn high compliment. And that's going to do it for this episode. You can find this podcast on all the podcasting platforms wherever you listen to them. If you like what you hear, please subscribe or follow the podcast and leave us a review. If you'd like to contact us directly, we can be reached at RidiculousRockRecords@gmail.com or also on the Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews Facebook page, where there's a link to hear each podcast. We're also on Twitter at R4PodcastAaron and Instagram under R4Podcaster. If you feel the podcast has value and would like to make a contribution to support it, please head over to Patreon and the Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews page and sign up on one of the monthly tiers. Feel free to leave all of your feedback, comments, reviews, and or suggestions at any of those places I just described. We'd love to hear from you. So for the R4 Podcast, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Mike.
And I'm Luis.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Rear.
And was recorded from November 1980. Jesus. Marcus Grosskopf on Dumbkopf.
Do you have COVID? You have a gross cough.
I'm having a hard time. I'm having a hard time not to slip into Sergeant Schultz voice.
Marcus Grosskopf.
Schultz.